like a melody
that haunts you night and day.
Just like the strain of a haunting refrain.
She'll start upon a marathon and run around your brain.
Ah, yes, a pretty girl is like a melody. That's why we have beauty pageants, right? So, for lead-off this week here on Radio Derb, a beauty pageant story. So, I'd had my dinner and three or four glasses of wine, and I was watching the TV news, not taking very much of it in, I'm afraid, when suddenly there was this exceptionally beautiful young woman on the screen. I had Susan Boyle on my mind for some reason. You know, the singing Scottish spinster. And in my state of postprandial disorientation, I thought for one bizarre moment that Miss Boyle had had the world's best ever makeover. But no, this was Miss California, the lithe and lissom Carrie Prejean, competing in the Miss USA pageant. There'd been a snag, though, a discordant note disturbing the bland harmony of the proceedings. Instead of being asked in the usual way what she would do to promote world peace, or how she thought we could best advance environmental awareness, or being given an opportunity to tell us how she spends her weekends doing volunteer work with disabled children, Carrie was sucker-punched with a question about homosexual marriage. "What did she think of it?" asked the judge. Some C-list celebrity I never heard of. Carrie parted her lovely lips and replied, quote, "I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offence to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised." Now that struck me as a courteous, graceful, forthright and sensible answer to the question that had been asked. As a matter of fact, I agree with Carrie, and I would still agree with her even if she looked like Susan Boyle. Nobody's stopping homosexuals from living together, if that's what they want to do. Nobody's stopping them from doing anything, except laying claim to a word that has had a certain meaning for 10,000 years and that a majority of citizens would prefer to go on having that meaning, and no other. The judge who asked the question, though, is himself a hysterical homosexual, and apparently Carrie's answer left him so verklempt he voted against her. Miss North Carolina is the new Miss USA, though she isn't half as pretty as Carrie Prejean. She doesn't have much character either. If she did, she'd hand over her trophy and her winnings to Carrie, on principle, like Tony Manero with the Puerto Ricans in Saturday Night Fever. Bill Shakespeare's 445th birthday fell this week, reminding all too many of us, in fact most of us, I'd guess, how pathetically little we know about his works. I just went through the 37 plays, giving myself a point for each one that I've seen in performance, including amateur performances, operas, TV adaptations, and the like. And then an extra point if I thought I could give at least an approximate summary of the plot. Result? A miserable 32 from a possible 74. I'll take some small consolation from Ben Jonson's remark that Shakespeare had little Latin and no Greek. That meant that by the standards of his time, the bard himself was ill-educated in the classics. Is there anything more ludicrous and disgusting than a bunch of shyster politicians striking moral poses? Well, here we go again with the torture debate. The political left, who of course ooze moral purity from every pore, are all in a lather about some recently released memos from the previous administration, detailing the legal advice that administration got on interrogation techniques. And then some CIA memos came out revealing that one terrorist had been waterboarded 183 times and another one 83 times. Hearing that, I'd guess that most citizens reacted as I did. If they did it to the guy 183 times, how bad can it be? In fact, the main impression you get from reading these reports is of the feebleness of our interrogation techniques. Quote, "A harmless insect is placed with the suspect in a confinement box. The suspect is to be told that the insect would sting." End quote. This technique was actually approved for Abu Zubaydah, but not used. Too horrific, I guess. After all, we're a civilized nation, you know. Oh, here's another unspeakably horrific torture technique used by the Torquemadas of our CIA. Quote, "The suspect is slammed repeatedly into a false wall to create sound and shock. He wears a padded collar to prevent neck injury." End quote. They must be rolling around laughing in the caves up there in Waziristan. That's all I can say. If this is torture, then my friends who did US Marine Corps training back in the 1960s were tortured on a regular basis, unless they're making up those stories about sadistic drill sergeants. You want to know what torture is? I'll tell you what torture is, if you can handle it. Torture is listening to the sanctimonious drivel extruded by Senators Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and Patrick Leahy. Torture is having to see the vapid triumphalist grin of Representative Nancy Pelosi day after day. Torture is watching a once proud and independent republic consuming its own flesh in spasms of self-righteous vindictiveness. And torture is what these preening exemplars of morality will be falling over each other to legalize if the USA takes another hit from terrorists. At least they will if the hit actually comes anywhere near them or the lobbyist pimps who keep them and feed them. Did you see that Somali pirate grinning as he was taken off the plane that brought him to America? Of course he's grinning. He's in America. If you're a Somali goat herd, that's like going to heaven. What does he care if they put him in jail? Life in an American jail is way better than life in some East African village. If you doubt that, you might ask David Kihuha. This fellow, 36 years old, comes from Kenya. He originally arrived here on a student visa, but that visa expired 13 years ago, so he's just been living here illegally. He applied for asylum, but he was denied since he's not in any actual danger in Kenya. And now, since he unfortunately has no blood relationship with Barack Obama, he's in jail awaiting deportation. Mr. Kihuha's putting up terrific resistance, though. Twice last year, when immigration agents tried to deport him, he made such a nuisance of himself, they had to give up. They put a leather head covering on him, a thing called a spit mask, to prevent him from biting them. Mr. Kihuha chewed it up. On another occasion, he smeared excrement all over himself. Explaining their failure to deport him, ICE agents told the court, quote, "Commercial pilots will not accept a violent, feces-besmeared passenger who chews off protective clothing and spits and bites," end quote. Yeah, hard to blame them. And what does Mr. Kehuha say? Quote, "I told them I did not want to go. I told them to take me back to jail." There you have it. Three hots and a cot in Leavenworth beats dirt farming in Africa, which is a bit surprising when you remember what a shamefully racist country this is. I'm betting this Somali pirate will do 5 years in the slammer and then get out and be given a green card and start shipping his relatives over. All 800 of them. John McCain's Senate term expires next year, and he has to stand for re-election for his seat. This is the guy who got together with Ted Kennedy to cook up the 2007 amnesty bill, the one that had to be pulled after massive outrage from the Republican electorate. This is the guy who hired a shill for the government of Mexico, who was in fact actually an ex-employee of that government, as one of the directors of his presidential campaign. This is the guy who was given a D grade by Americans for Better Immigration. This is the guy who refused to allow anyone at last year's Republican National Convention to speak critically of US immigration policy and enforcement. This is the guy who pretty much threw the election for fear that CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post would call him a racist if he so much as whispered the name of Jeremiah Wright. This was the guy who was scared to land a glove on Obama in case Obama played the race card against him, which of course Obama did anyway at every opportunity. Well, McCain has an opponent in the Republican primary next year, Chris Simcox, co-founder of the Minuteman Project. Chris has a campaign website up at simcoxforsenate.com, and he is accepting donations. Arizonans, this is your chance to send John McCain into an honorable and peaceful retirement. If you'd done that 6 years ago, we might not now be looking at the most left-wing administration in the history of the Republic. In case you're anxious about who'll take care of you should you get old and helpless, the answer is very likely a robot. The Robo Business Exposition 2009 was held in Boston last week, and there was some amazing stuff on display. Even in a recession, robotics is booming. It's expanding into two big growth areas, the military and what is called elder care. At the deep level, both areas are driven by demographics. With the generality of people no longer having four or five kids to send to war, the advanced world is running out of soldiers. The value of a soldier's life has correspondingly increased, and if a clever little robot can deal with some dangerous battlefield task, thereby saving soldiers' lives, the military is keen to know. The other big growth area, elder care, is a response to aging populations, in which there aren't enough trained young carers to assist the swelling numbers of semi-helpless geezers. Robots can't do everything people can do, of course, and likely this will always be the case. So what? Automobiles can't do everything horses do either. When did you see an automobile jump a fence? This didn't stop autos winning out over horses in most areas. It's the same with robots, as the Boston show illustrated. They'll do more and more, and they'll do it better and better. personally, staring into the abyss of old age, if I'm to need help, I'd rather get it from some tweeting R2-D2 contraption than from some minimum-wage nursing home orderly with an attitude. And military-wise, if my son can sit in a nice air-conditioned office remote-controlling a bomb disposal robot, well, that looks to me like a net advance for human civilization. Bring on the robots, I say. Hey, where's that cup of coffee I asked for 20 minutes ago? What do you mean you had to peel a grape for Jonah? What am I, chopped liver? One of the great mysteries of the modern world is why the United States continues to have anything to do with the United Nations. This week, the full lunacy of the UN was on display in Geneva, Switzerland, at the confusingly named Durban 2 conference. The name is explained on the conference website, quote, "The Durban Review Conference, 20th to 24th of April 2009, will evaluate progress towards the goals set by the World Conference Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia and Related Intolerance in Durban, South Africa in 2001." End quote. Well, what's going on at this wonderful conference dedicated to racial harmony? Let's see. Thursday we had a report from Mr. Abdul Wahab Attar of Saudi Arabia, who told us, inter alia, that Saudi Arabia condemns defamation of religions and beliefs and disparagement of the personalities and symbols, not only of the Islamic religion, but also of other religions and beliefs. Of course they do. This is the country whose government newspaper back in 1960 announced the arrest of Adolf Eichmann with the headline, "Arrest of Eichmann, who had the honour of killing 6 million Jews." Saudi Arabia is still ruled by the same family, under the same system, and their newspapers are probably still running the same kind of headlines. Then we had an address from Mr. Lee Sung-joo, who, as I'm sure you know, is the UN's human rights representative from North Korea. Mr. Lee told us that his government had enacted a law on support for multicultural families to protect the human rights of foreigners, including migrant workers and their children living in North Korea. You see, we're not the only nation plagued by illegal immigration. North Korea is struggling to control its borders against the flood of people trying to get in there to do the jobs that North Koreans won't do. What a farce. But I say again, the biggest scandal of all is not that these thieves, murderers and liars are having a conference, but that American money, your money and my money, citizen, American taxpayers' money, is going to fund this circus of the insane. There is a terrible sickness in the American soul, and the UN building in New York City is a symptom of it. Let's get out of this filthy, disgraceful racket and kick out the corrupt, Jew-baiting thieves who've made it their expense account playground. Our Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, continues to escalate the war of words against the most dire, most looming, most immediate threat to the security of our homeland. That would be Canada, of course. In a TV interview earlier this week, secure borders fanatic Napolitano took a break from supervising the construction of a 60-foot wall and minefield along the 49th parallel to say the following thing, quote, "Yes, Canada is not Mexico. It doesn't have a drug war going on. It didn't have 6,000 homicides that were drug-related last year. Nonetheless, to the extent that terrorists have come into our country, or suspected or known terrorists have entered our country across a border, it's been across the Canadian border. The interviewer asked her if she was talking about the 9/11 terrorists. Not just those, but others as well, frothed Janet. Here's my surmise. I think Miss Napolitano is a clone of Jocelyn Elders. Remember Surgeon General Elders back in the early Clinton years, calling for masturbation to be taught in public schools? She didn't last long. I'm betting that Janet Napolitano is coming to the end of her shelf life, too. Anyway, I hope Obama dumps her before we get into a shooting war with the friendly giant to our north. A couple of news items from New Zealand here. The land of the Kiwis doesn't get much of a look in on Radio Derb, so let's give them their moment of glory here. And I promise, no sheep jokes. Okay, news item number one. The government down there found out by chance that the names of the two islands, which New Zealanders, with regrettable lack of imagination, call North Island and South Island, were never actually officially registered anywhere. Since the two islands have no official names, the New Zealand government has asked citizens to suggest names. You can pretty much get the measure of New Zealanders if I tell you that the most popular suggestions so far are, yes, North Island and South Island. Other suggestions have included Key and Wee. I like that, Key and Wee. Not Australia and still not Australia. Peach and Melba. That's some kind of subtle Kiwi joke, don't ask me. And Cheech and Chong. Oh, nice to know that there are some 70s survivors down there in the Antipodes. Or perhaps it's still the 70s down there, who knows? Most likely political correctness will win the day, and they'll come up with names from the Maori language. It would only be justice, after all, since the Europeans took away from the Maoris all their cherished, picturesque customs. You know, slavery, perpetual warfare, cannibalism, human sacrifice, all those quaint old folkways. My own suggestion is to call the islands New and Zealand. I mean, since the name of the country's already got two words in it, the solution's ready-made right there. Seems pretty cut and dried to me. Speaking of cut and dried, here's the other New Zealand story. Three preserved, shrunken Maori heads will be returned to New Zealand after being kept for several decades at a museum in Glasgow, Scotland. The tattooed heads, and also a thigh bone, are believed to belong to Maori chiefs killed in battle in the 19th century. After a Maori killed someone in battle, you see, he cut off his head and took it home to be pickled and kept as a souvenir on the living room bookshelf. One of the heads is believed to have belonged to a Maori chief who had 40 wives. Ah, those picturesque old customs. I'd better stop this segment right here before someone tells me that a flotilla of Maori war canoes has been sighted paddling up Long Island Sound. I'm just kidding around, guys. My head wouldn't pickle well anyway, and I only have one wife. Thank goodness.
Oh, come on, take a
heck was that? Honestly, officer, I was just trying to help this sheep climb over the fence. No, I promised. I'm sorry, I promised. President Obama showed up at the Summit of the Americas in the Caribbean last weekend and spent a happy few hours partying with the bandits, thieves, murderers, narcotics traffickers, fascists, Leninists, and racial triumphalists who pass for national leaders in that benighted part of our hemisphere. Hugo Chavez, the Marxist president of Venezuela, gave President Obama a book whose title was something like Kill All White Gringo Capitalist Yankee Bloodsuckers and Grind Up Their Bones for Adobe Paste. Obama was delighted with the gift, and he favoured Chavez with a hearty handshake and the number one presidential smile. Chavez had just nationalised a big U.S. company. But then so had Obama, so they had something to talk about at least. And let's be thankful for small mercies. At least Obama didn't bow to Chavez. Over in Pakistan, the Taliban have made another big advance, and now they're just 60 miles from Islamabad, the nation's capital. It may be that that's as far as they will get. Their appeal is mainly to poor rural people, and in Afghanistan, where they control a lot of country areas, they haven't been able to recapture any substantial cities. On the other hand, that is exactly what everyone was saying about the Chinese communists around 1946. Pakistan has a big, solid, and quite prosperous urban middle class. But then, so did China have in 1946. And Iran in 1979, and for that matter, Russia in 1917. There's no telling how these things will go. Big, prosperous middle classes are very nice things to have, but they're not much of a bulwark against crazy fanatics with guns. Can the USA do something to help prevent Pakistan from going belly up? Well, of course, we can do something. We can launch a major land war in West Asia. However, considering the trouble we had with Iraq, population 29 million, we should think carefully before trying to go into Pakistan, population 180 million, and trying to put them to rights. But that's all academic. There's no public appetite for a war on terror bigger than the one we're currently fighting. Probably when the Obama honeymoon is over, and with 9/11 receding into the distance in the public memory, there won't even be a public willingness to sustain the effort at this level. If Pakistan's going down, there's not likely much we can do about it. My own solution? Nuclear testing. We should pop off a couple of big ones under the Nevada desert, just to remind a nuclear Iran, a nuclear Taliban-run Pakistan, and anyone else who's interested, that we are loaded up to the gunnels with nukes, and we're keeping them in spanking good condition. Deterrence worked with the Soviets. It will work with the Islamists. It had better, anyway, as there isn't much else we can do. Larry Summers, who in spite of being a little deficient in the backbone region, is one of the smartest men on the planet, was photographed dozing at a White House meeting while his boss, President Obama, was giving one of his wonderful, uplifting, hope-filled speeches. I don't blame Summers a bit. Obama's gassy rhetoric sends me to sleep, too. What a windbag the man is. Remember back in the Reagan administration, when the joke was that if someone said, "I've slept with the president," It meant they'd attended a cabinet meeting. Well, I wish Obama would take a leaf from Reagan's book and nod off himself through some of these ego fests. I spent 20 years in the corporate world, attending meetings pretty much every day, and 90% of those meetings were a waste of time. I make that 95%. I really resent having wasted so much of my life sitting in uncomfortable chairs, listening to accountants, lawyers, and executives droning through their stupid playbooks. When the Chinese communists won their war against Chiang Kai-shek's nationalists and took over the country, people grumbled that under the nationalists it was nothing but taxes, under the communists it's nothing but meetings. Which rhymes in Chinese. With the Obamaroids in power, we're getting taxes and meetings. Lots of taxes, lots of meetings. Not that I'm suggesting the Obamaroids are communists, of course. Certainly not. It is a fact, though, that lefties love meetings because meetings give them an opportunity to talk for hours and hours, which is all they know how to do. And there you have it. Misery, mayhem, malfeasance, and Maoris. All human life is here, multiculturally, on the network they can't suppress. Tune in again next week for another refreshing draft of Tory pessimism from National Review Online and Radio Derb.